Chapter 140. And Constancy raised to upon what secret and hidden foundations, wherein lay buried passions, uncounted struggles, unknown sacrifices, a little word was spoken, and down fell the fair palace of hope one word, and away flew the bird which he had been trying all his life to lure. William, though he saw by Amelia's looks that a great crisis had come, nevertheless continued to implore Sedley, in the most energetic terms, to beware of Rebecca, and he eagerly, almost frantically, adjured Jones not to receive her. He besought Mr. Sedley to inquire at least regarding her, told him how he had heard that she was in the company of gamblers and people of ill repute, pointed out what evilness he had done in former days, how she and Crawley had misled poor George into ruin, how she was now parted from her husband, by her own confession, and, perhaps, for good reason. What a dangerous companion she would be for his sister, who knew nothing of the affairs of the world. William implored Joes, with all the eloquence which he could bring to bear, and a great deal more energy than this quiet gentleman was ordinarily in the habit of showing, to keep Rebecca out of his household. Had he been less violent, or more dexterous, he might have succeeded in his supplications to Joes, but the civilian was not a little jealous of the airs of superiority which the major constantly exhibited towards him, as he fancied, indeed. He had imparted his opinions to Mr. Kirsch, the courier, whose bills Major Dobbin checked on this journey, and who sided with his master, and he began a blustering speech about his competency to defend his own honor, his desire not to have his affairs meddled with, his intention, in fine, to rebel against the Major, when the colloquy, rather a long and stormy one, was put an end to in the simplest way possible, namely, by the arrival of Mrs. Becky, with a porter from the Elephant Hotel in charge of her very meager baggage. She greeted her host with affectionate respect, and made a shrinking, but amicable salutation to Major Dobbin, who, as her instinct assured her at once, was her enemy, and had been speaking against her, and the bustle and clatter consequent upon her arrival brought Amelia out of her room. Emmy went up, and embraced her guest with the greatest warmth, and took no notice of the Major, except to fling him an angry look, the most unjust and scornful glance that had perhaps ever appeared in that poor little woman's face since she was born. But as he had private reasons of her own, and was bent upon being angry with him, and Dobbin, indignant at the injustice, not at the defeat, went off, making her a bow quite as haughty as the killing curtsy with which the little woman chose to bid him farewell. He being gone, Emmy was particularly lively and affectionate to Rebecca, and bustled about the apartments, and installed her guest in her room with an eagerness and activity seldom exhibited by our placid little friend. But when an act of injustice is to be done, especially by weak people, it is best that it should be done quickly, and Emmy thought she was displaying a great deal of firmness, and proper feeling and veneration for the late Captain Osborne in her present behavior. Georgie came in from the fates for dinner time, and found four covers laid as usual, but one of the places was occupied by a lady, instead of by Major Dobbin. H. Hello. Where's Dob? The young gentleman asked with his usual simplicity of language. Major Dobbin is dining out, I suppose, his mother said, and, drawing the boy to her, kissed him a great deal, and put his hair off his forehead, and introduced him to Mrs. Crawley. His is my boy, Rebecca, Mrs. Osborne said, as much as to say, can the world produce anything like that? Becky looked at him with rapture, and pressed his hand fondly. Dear boy, she said, he is just like my emotion choked her further utterance, but Amelia understood, as well as he had spoken, that Becky was thinking of her own blessed child. However, the company of her friend consoled Mrs. Crawley, and she ate a very good dinner. During the repast, S.E. had occasion to speak several times, when Georgie eyed her, and listened to her. At the desert, Emmy was gone out to superintend further domestic arrangements. Joe's was in his great chair dozing over Galignani. G. Georgi and the new arrival sat close to each other. He had continued to look at her knowingly more than once, and at last he laid down the nutcrackers. "I say," said Georgi. "What do you say?" Becky said, laughing. "You're the lady I saw in the mask at the Rouge et Noir." "Hush, you little sly creature," Becky said, taking up his hand and kissing it. "Our uncle was there too, and Mama mustn't know." "Oh, no, not by no means," answered the little fellow. "You see, we are quite good friends already," Becky said to Emmy, who now re-entered, "and it must be owned that Mrs. Osborne had introduced a most judicious and amiable companion into her house." William, in a state of great indignation, though still unaware of all the treason that was in store for him, walked about the town wildly until he fell upon the Secretary of Legation, Tapeworm, who invited him to dinner. As they were discussing that meal, he took occasion to ask the secretary whether he knew anything about a certain Mrs. Rawdon Crawley, who had, he believed, made some noise in London, and then Tapeworm, who of course knew all the London gossip, and was besides a relative of Lady Gaunt, poured out into the astonished major's ear such a history about Becky and her husband as astonished the querist, and supplied all the points of this narrative, for it was at that very table years ago that the present writer had the pleasure of hearing the tale. Tufto, Stan, the Crawleys, and their history, everything connected with Becky and her previous life, passed under the record of the bitter diplomatist. He knew everything and a great deal besides, about all the world in a word. He made the most astounding revelations to the simple-hearted major. When Dobbin said that Mrs. Osborne and Mr. Sedley had taken her into their house, Tapeworm burst into a peal of laughter which shocked the major, and asked if they had not better send into the prison and taken one or two of the gentlemen in shaved heads and yellow jackets who swept the streets of Pumpernickel, chained in pairs, to board and lodge, and act as tutor to that little scapegrace Georgi. This information astonished and horrified the major not a little. It had been agreed in the morning before meeting with Rebecca that Amelia should go to the court ball that night. There would be the place where he should tell her. The major went home and dressed himself in his uniform and repaired to court in hopes to see Mrs. Osborne. She never came. When he returned to his lodgings, all the lights in the Sedley tenement were put out. He could not see her till the morning. I don't know what sort of a night's rest he had with this frightful secret in bed with him. At the earliest convenient hour in the morning, he sent his servant across the way with a note, saying that he wished very particularly to speak with her. A message came back to say that Mrs. Osborne was exceedingly unwell and was keeping her room. She, too, had been awake all that night. As he had been thinking of a thing which had agitated her mind 100 times before. 100 times on the point of yielding, as he had shrunk back from a sacrifice which he felt was too much for her. She couldn't, in spite of his love and constancy and her own acknowledged regard, respect, and gratitude. What are benefits? What is constancy, or merit? One curl of a girl's ringlet, one hair of a whisker, will turn the scale against them all in a minute. They did not weigh with Emmy more than with other women. As he had tried them, wanted to make them pass, could not, and the pitiless little woman had found a pretext, and determined to be free. When at length, in the afternoon, the major gained admission to Amelia, instead of the cordial and affectionate greeting to which he had been accustomed now for many a long day, he received the salutation of a curtsy and of a little gloved hand, retracted the moment after it was accorded to him. Rebecca, too, was in the room, and advanced to meet him with a smile and an extended hand. Dobbin drew back rather confusedly. I beg your pardon, ma'am, he said. But I am bound to tell you that it is not as your friend that I am come here now. Pooh! Damn! Don't let us have this sort of thing! Joe's cried out, alarmed, and anxious to get rid of a scene. I wonder what Major Dobbin has to say against Rebecca? Amelia said in a low, clear voice with a slight quiver in it, and a very determined look about the eyes. I will not have this sort of thing in my house, Jose again interposed. Say I will not have it, and Dobbin, I beg, sir, you'll stop it. And he looked round, trembling and turning very red, and gave a great puff, and made for his door. Dear friend, Rebecca said with angelic sweetness, do hear what Major Dobbin has to say against me. I will not hear it, I say, squeaked out Jose at the top of his voice, and, gathering up his dressing gown, he was gone. We are only two women, Amelia said. Who can speak now, sir? This manner towards me is one which scarcely becomes you, Amelia, the Major answered haughtily. Nor, I believe, am I guilty of habitual harshness to women. It is not a pleasure to me to do the duty which I am come to do. Pray proceed with it quickly, if you please, Major Dobbin, said Amelia, who was more and more in a pet. The expression of Dobbin's face, as she spoke in this imperious manner, was not pleasant. I came to say, and as you say, Mrs. Crawley, I must say it in your presence, that I think you ought not to form a member of the family of my friends. A lady who is separated from her husband, who travels not under her own name, who frequents public gaming tables, it was to the ball I went, cried out Becky, is not a fit companion for Mrs. Osborne and her son, Dobbin went on. And I may add, that there are people here who know you, and who profess to know that regarding your conduct about which I don't even wish to speak before Mrs. Osborne. Yours is a very modest, and convenient sort of calumny, Major Dobbin, Rebecca said. Who leave me under the weight of an accusation which, after all, is unsaid. What is it? Is it unfaithfulness to my husband? I scorn it and defy anybody to prove it. I defy you, I say. My honor is as untouched as that of the bitterest enemy who ever maligned me. Is it of being poor, forsaken, wretched, that you accuse me? Yes, I am guilty of those faults, and punished for them every day. Let me go, Emmy. It is only to suppose that I have not met you, and I am no worse today than I was yesterday. It is only to suppose that the night is over and the poor wanderer is on her way. Don't you remember the song we used to sing in old, dear old days? I have been wandering ever since then, a poor castaway, scorned for being miserable, and insulted because I am alone. Let me go. My stay here interferes with the plans of this gentleman. Indeed it does, madam, said the Major. If I have any authority in this house, authority, none. Broke out Amelia Becca, you stay with me. I won't desert you, because you have been persecuted, or insult you, because Major Dobbin chooses to do so. Come away, dear. And the two women made towards the door. William opened it. As they were going out, however, he took Amelia's hand and said, will you stay a moment, and speak to me? He wishes to speak to you away from me, said Becky, looking like a martyr. Amelia gripped her hand in reply. Upon my honor, it is not about you that I am going to speak, Dobbin said. Home back, Amelia, and she came. Dobbin bowed to Mrs. Crawley as he shut the door upon her. Amelia looked at him, leaning against the glass. Her face and her lips were quite white. I was confused when I spoke just now, the Major said after a pause, and I misused the word authority. You did, said Amelia with her teeth chattering. At least I have claims to be heard, Dobbin continued. It is generous to remind me of our obligations to you, the woman answered. The claims I mean, are those left me by George's father, William said. Yes, and you insulted his memory. You did yesterday. You know you did. And I will never forgive you. Never, said Amelia. She shot out each little sentence in a tremor of anger and emotion. You don't mean that, Amelia? William said sadly. You don't mean that these words, uttered in a hurried moment, are to weigh against a whole life's devotion? I think that George's memory has not been injured by the way in which I have dealt with it, and if we are come to bandying reproaches, I at least merit none from his widow, and the mother of his son. Reflect afterwards when you are at leisure, and your conscience will withdraw this accusation. It does even now. Amelia held down her head. It is not that speech of yesterday, he continued, which moves you. That is but the pretext, Amelia, or I have loved you, and watched you for 15 years in vain. Have I not learned in that time to read all your feelings and look into your thoughts? I know what your heart is capable of. It can cling faithfully to a recollection and cherish a fancy, but it can't feel such an attachment as mine deserves to mate with, and such as I would have won from a woman more generous than you. No, you are not worthy of the love which I have devoted to you. I knew all along that the prize I had set my life on was not worth the winning, that I was a fool, with fond fancies too, bartering away my all of truth and ardor against your little feeble remnant of love. I will bargain no more. I withdraw. I find no fault with you. You are very good-natured, and have done your best, but you couldn't reach up to the height of the attachment which I bore you, and which a loftier soul than yours might have been proud to share. Goodbye, Amelia. I have watched your struggle. Let it end. We are both weary of it. Amelia stood scared and silent as William thus suddenly broke the chain by which she held him, and declared his independence and superiority. He had placed himself at her feet so long that the poor little woman had been accustomed to trample upon him. She didn't wish to marry him, but she wished to keep him. She wished to give him nothing, but that he should give her all. It is a bargain not unfrequently levied in love. William's sally had quite broken, and cast her down. Her assault was long since over and beaten back. Am I to understand then that you are going away, William? She said. He gave a sad laugh. Went once before, he said, and came back after 12 years. We were young then, Amelia. Goodbye. I have spent enough of my life at this play. Whilst they had been talking, the door into Mrs. Osborne's room had opened ever so little. Indeed, Becky had kept a hold of the handle, and had turned it on the instant when Dobbin quitted it, and she heard every word of the conversation that had passed between these two. W, what a noble heart that man has, she thought, and how shamefully that woman plays with it. She admired Dobbin. She bore him no rancor for the part he had taken against her. It was an Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.